Welcome back to Plot Pit. William Atkinson here with
John LeMay
in studio. And we also have a special guest, Boyd Barrett, in studio. How are you, Boyd?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
Welcome. What are we talking about today?
Today we're going to talk about sorcery and the space age in New Mexico.
Sorcery? The space age? Like Robert Goddard stuff?
No Robert Goddard, but we could work him in there possibly.
All right. Well, let's begin the descent and find out. But first, John, introduce Boyd for us.
So Boyd is a friend of mine from here in Roswell. And Boyd goes so far back, he even knows my mother. And Boyd does a lot of voice work. So Boyd, tell us about what you do professionally.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm a real estate appraiser for most of my professional life. But I've been telling stories forever. And when I first moved out here to New Mexico, which was over 40 years ago now, I looked around at New Mexico history and picked up on the whole Billy the Kid story and developed a one-man show because I had done performances forever with a group that I traveled with, all that type of thing. But once I got here, I wanted to do a one-man show. And so the one-man show about Billy the Kid and the Lincoln County War, which most people around here, if they know my name, that's what they know me by. And it's called Trouble in Lincoln County. So I did that from the mid-80s to the early 90s, went all over the state and all over the Southwest, actually, and just told the story of Billy the Kid with multiple characters. And so I've done all kinds of stage work, that kind of thing, but now I'm doing audiobooks. And that's how John and I have been working together recently, because his two novels are just incredible. And once I read them, I thought, I've got to do them. I just have to do these audiobooks.
Yeah, I remember when I read Noted Desperado, I reached out to John and I said, hey, are you doing an audible book?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, funny, you just asked. Boyd beat you to it.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's so much fun. You know, the characters are so wild. And so I'm loving it.
Who's your favorite character?
Ooh, boy, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, boy, that's a tough one.
Probably.
Is my reading comprehension that bad?
No, probably seven.
Oh, seven. He likes the villain. Likes the villain best.
Yeah.
That's cool.
He's just fun to do because it's that low gravelly voice. So I love doing that. And it's interesting because of the two books, they're set like 25, 26 years apart.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And so, but the same character. So I have to use a different, it's the same voice, but older in the first one as then in the second one. So anyway, it's interesting.
Awesome.
Yeah. And today what we're going to do, so I'm not saying I'm going to use the story we create today for my books. I kind of already know what I'm going to do, but one of the elements we're going to talk about today, I know I'm going to use in one of my future books, which is this man who was accused of being a sorcerer back during the Mexican Inquisition back in the 1600s. So, you know, I don't know what ideas I'll cherry pick from today's session, but I might pick out a few. We'll see.
All right. Well, kick us off.
I'm going to kick us off in the present with Spaceport America, which is located out in the New Mexico desert, 20 miles southeast of Truth or Consequences. And on May 22nd, 2021, they actually conducted their first successful flight into outer space, making New Mexico the third state after California and Florida to launch spacecraft. So that's another cool distinction that the Land of Enchantment gets to have. And I think most of our listeners are fairly familiar with Spaceport, wouldn't you agree? I mean, that made big news when it was first created.
Yeah, not terribly long ago.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, basically it's a commercial spaceport, which is very unique, just out in the middle of nowhere in the New Mexico desert.
Which would make sense for the whole long runway thing.
Exactly.
Now, as far as I am aware, they do not have a skip site yet.
No, not that I know of.
Let's hope it stays that way.
Yeah. So, and you know, anywhere that's in the middle of nowhere, they always have their interesting history. What I love about this area's history is it combines, you know, the space age with ancient superstitions and sorcery. So the nearest place name to Spaceport America, it's not a village, it's not a town, it's just literally a little place name. I don't think there was ever so much as a post office there that I remember, but it's called Aleman. Aleman. And Aleman, if I'm saying it right, means simply the German. So it was named after this German man named Bernard Gruber. We don't know exactly when he came to Mexico, but he was predominantly a trader from the Mexico region. He would procure interesting goods and then transport them north into New Mexico. And for context, this is the 1600s, so New Mexico obviously isn't part of the United States yet, because the United States doesn't exist yet. It's a territory of the Kingdom of New Spain. And so the year is 1667, and it is Christmas morning at a pueblo called Quarry Pueblo. And so Gruber is hanging out with a couple of Native American friends in the church. And people today think that Gruber was probably just having a joke. Maybe he'd been drinking. Who knows what? Because, again, you know, it's the middle of the Mexican Inquisition. Not to be confused with the Spanish Inquisition of Spain. You know, when the Spanish conquered Mexico, they also had the Mexican Inquisition where, you know, they would put accused witches and sorcerers on trial. But Bernard Gruber, for whatever reason, he decided to practice some sorcery in the church. And it's not real obvious sorcery, like, you know, it's not something as dark as a blood ritual or something like that. All he did was he wrote a spell on a couple of pieces of paper. And he told some of the Native American parishioners that if you eat this paper, you will be invincible for 24 hours all of Christmas Day. And a few of them believed it, and they ate the paper, and there's, like, conflicting historical reports that, of course, you know, 400 years later, we can't prove. You know, some people act like the people who ate the paper were actually invulnerable to harm. They were like invincible. Other people say they were just in on the joke. Well, one of the boys that ate the paper told his dad about it. And he was, I believe, a captain in the Spanish army. And, you know, accusations of witchcraft were very serious. You know, not only that, he had done it in the church. So by April of the next year, he was arrested and put on trial in Mexico City for the Inquisition. And he actually... This Bernard Gruber, he languished in prison for a total of 2 years just because they were kind of backed up. They were suffering a drought and food shortages, so he didn't even get a trial for quite a while. So as such, he understandably, he decided to, you know, forge an escape, which he did on June 22nd, 1670. At 3 a.m, he managed to loosen the wooden posts that were keeping him confined. And he and a Native American companion then headed north back into New Mexico, because again, he was taken all the way down to Mexico City for his trial, which never even happened. And the stretch of desert he was traveling on was as yet unnamed, but today we call it the Jornada del Muerto, or the Journey of Death. And this whole stretch of desert is actually named for Gruber. So Gruber, you know, he was in a very weakened state, having been in prison for so long. And just eventually along the trail, he died. His Indian companion had wandered off to go look for water and left him alone. And I have the actual report of when they found his remains. So on July 30th, 1670, Gruber's remains were found by some fellow traders and friends, among them Francisco Betancourt. I hope I'm saying his name right. But this man, he spotted a dead horse tied to one of the trees, because this was kind of a tiny little oasis in this very dry desert. That's why Gruber had stopped there. Basically, eventually they found his body. They stumbled across a coat and some trousers they recognized as the German's, and then they found his remains, and one of them in report wrote, "I examined his clothes, and it seemed as though they belonged to Bernardo Gruber, the fugitive. I made a search which did not result in vain, for I found at once all of his hair and the remnants of the clothing which he had worn. I and my companions searched carefully for the bones and found in very widely separated places the skull, 3 ribs, 2 long bones, and 2 other little bones which had been gnawed on by animals. It is supposed that the Indians traveling with the German killed him," end of the quote, but nobody thinks that his Native American companion murdered him. He just literally went off to go and find a water source for Gruber, who was dying of thirst. And anyway, so that's literally where the Jornada del Muerto got its name, was from this accused German sorcerer who maybe was just playing a prank. Now, in terms of German folklore, the idea of writing a spell on a piece of paper and ingesting it, that is something that Germans believed in their native country, so he was kind of bringing it to America. And I don't know, do either of you know much about German folklore and magic or anything like that? I don't either. I probably should have looked into that before we started recording. But I just feel like you've got this dead German sorcerer buried very near the site of New Mexico's first spaceport, and surely we can make a story out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I saw what you were going to be talking about, we were going to be talking about today, one thing that I found out, this Jornada del Muerto, or Muerto, is about 90 miles. So 90 miles with very little water source. then I thought about maybe starting the story at the spaceport with a launch and two or three people being in the, they go up, and after your 60 or 70 miles is where you have to get up to outer space. So as they're going up, and I'm not sure what the mission is, you know, that's up for grabs, but they're going up there and they hit that 90 mile mark and something really weird happens. And they, either they, you know, it's, I don't think it's a crash, but they disappear or something. And then they appear back down in the past on the 90 mile Jornada del Muerto.
Oh, I like it. Is that kind of the gist of it?
That's the gist of it. And, okay. And so what they encounter, what these two or three people, the astronauts, and these would be, I guess most of these are private people that are doing these.
Yeah, I think they're just regular, they would be rich people, but you know, they're not astronauts or
which might
like
make
that.
It even more interesting. They're not really trained for
that. Would
know,
make
survival.
It like this would be in the genre of the 70s disaster movies where you have eclectic personalities, you know, on whatever, whether it's a flaming building or a sinking cruise ship. And so maybe that's the start. It's modeled after a 70s disaster movie. They crash back in time. Okay, is there any more, Boyd?
No, I think that was just what I thought, you know. And oh, the title. 90 Miles Up.
Okay, oh, that's a good title. That's a good title.
That is a good title.
So I the way I see it, then, if, and we don't have to tie it to the German. Sometimes we come up with these concepts.
Well, but the German was on that thing, so it could be at that particular point where he and and a Native American are.
Yeah, because sometimes we think we need like three concepts, and then we'll just end up running with one of them, and it's great. But so if I, you know, if we have to work the German in, my thought would be the German was casting a spell that helped bring them back in time. What do you think, William? He cast a spell, and they get sucked into the past. Does that make sense?
Well, a few episodes back, we toyed with the idea of Merlin in the Southwest, say being born, you know, 1920s, maybe 1940s or something, aging backwards and then having that bout with Billy the Kid era, you know, late 1800s. And then if we were to continue to rewind the clock, 1600s, right, he could be the sorcerer.
That's true, yeah.
Okay. And since he's aging backwards, presumably he's trying to figure out this whole time portal thing. Okay. So now he's messing around with casting stuff that would either reverse what he thinks is an unnatural aging process or something, right? Because you're going to realize that something's wrong when everybody is aging in an opposite direction as you are, right?
Yeah.
The other thought was, recently I watched an old animation of multiple images from Jupiter from the Voyager spacecraft where they put it all together from the 70s. And then you get to see like the swirling spiral of the Great Red Eye and, you know, the various bands going in all sorts of directions. And, you know, it's really fascinating to actually see that brought to life. And then, of course, you have like all these little tiny hurricanes in the atmosphere. So my head was thinking, okay, well, if that was to be playing out on Earth at some point, right, Merlin's doing his thing, there's a hurricane that comes through, things get all weird. Maybe you've got this interdimensional or a cross polarization of the different time continuums, and who knows what happens? Who knows what pops out?
Yeah.
1600s. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's just after the discovery of the New World. You know, as you mentioned, right? It's not quite the United States yet, but it's on the border between France and New Spain.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if we were to go back to that Merlin thing, how would that all tie together? Mm. And I think that the solid element there is Merlin, realizing that he's aging backwards, feels that this is unnatural, and is trying to correct the process with magic.
Yeah.
So now he's the sorcerer who's at this point in time that future spacecraft is then sucked into the past.
I think so. I think that's great. And then for anybody that listens to these first time or out of order, William and I got on a kick about Merlin a few episodes back where we had a story about from the 1870s where somebody saw kind of a flying snake encircle the sun. And we started playing with dragons in the Old West, and then it led to Merlin. So it didn't come from totally out of nowhere. So we play with the Merlin idea every once in a while, and he aged backwards. So that's what it's all about.
Another way to get into that would be, because I hadn't heard the whole thing about writing they write the spell and
he writes it and ingests it.
That could be, let's say there's three of these astronauts, and he gives three of these, and they ingest them. That's what brings these three back in time. it's the spell that was on those. I don't know.
I think that's what sends them home. And I think our conflict is, okay, they go back in time, and because they're from the future, they themselves get mistaken for witches and sorcerers because they have, they're used to certain types of technology, and maybe they don't understand that they got sent back in time. They just think they crashed in the desert. Then they see conquistadors on horses. So I would say the conquistadors would capture them. And then the German, whether he's Merlin or not, you know, he would come and he would have to save them.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2040, post-Elon Musk era, space flight has been largely commercialized. You've got this charter jet to Mars, so maybe 2060. Okay. And Merlin in the 1600s playing with the time continuum. On board, you've got these three folks, one of which is a German, this Gruber guy.
Oh, okay. I got you. Okay.
Now, there's an atmospheric anomaly. Merlin, at the same time, you know, if you were to think about parallel time continuums going simultaneously, however you want to, you know, conceptualize this from the science side, Merlin casts this spell just as this charter flight going to Mars crosses through an atmospheric threshold. They get zapped back in time. Now, Merlin is born, what, 1920? So he doesn't know about too much of what happened after that. He's aging backwards. So he recognizes that something strange happened. They step off with their smartphones or holographic imagery or whatever, right? So Merlin recognizes it as a form of magic, not necessarily technology.
Yeah.
The conquistadors are coming up. They recognize it as sorcery, and Merlin's caught up in the middle of it. And that's how the German gets arrested, because his other two companions found a way to flee. Or there was, you know, the writing, okay, on a piece of paper. Okay, maybe that's a form of medication. And it just so happens to be that it's like an invisibility thing.
Could be.
Maybe it's like a cloaking device. All right. So they vanish. Gruber doesn't get it in time. He gets hauled off to Mexico City. Now he's coming back on the escape, retracing his steps to go back to where he thought he would be able to either replicate the incident or find a way to get back home.
Yeah.
A lot of good avenues.
So then the conflict, right, is miscommunication across timelines.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The cultural divide and kind of a man versus nature kind of thing. And the first bit is just hunting down, okay, where are my buddies? And where's this Merlin guy? And where's my spaceship? And then all, you know, here we have Merlin, who finds a way to take the spaceship off to his hidden cave somewhere, thinking that it's like a uber glorious chariot.
So we've linked Merlin with Lewis and Clark and the spaceport. And what else did we link him with?
Quetzalcoatl.
Yeah.
The spaceport, Lewis and Clark. Quite a bit that we've, and we haven't even gotten past 1600 yet.
Yeah, that's all much better than my idea. Like, because when I was trying to formulate an idea, I was kind of just ripping off the old Twilight Zone episode with the thing on the wing with William Shatner, because New Mexico has these little magical creatures called duendes, which are New Mexico's versions of gnomes and trolls. So I thought, well, okay, it's, the spot is cursed because of the German sorcerer. And so the conflict is them trying to launch into space. And then on the first flight, you've got like the little duendes on the wing or something. And that was the best I could come up with. So that's a lot better than my idea.
Well, we certainly could hit it with the gremlins.
that would be a totally different story, totally different movie. So
I think part of it also needs to be that survival of those three whatever on that Jornada del Muerte.
I like the disaster movie template of the different personalities having to work together that probably don't like each other and have to escape from the Spaniards. And also, they would still have roving Native American tribes back then to escape from as well. Yeah. So they'd have plenty of dangers. And then if the sorcerer wasn't Merlin and he was more of a bad guy, in that case, you could have the sorcerer as the villain too. And he might have magical creatures like duendes and other New Mexico folkloric, I don't know, beings you could turn loose. So
if we were to go that route, Merlin, not necessarily a good guy, okay, in his early years, he's really kind of the thieving, mischievous individual. It's not until he meets King Arthur, who's noble, and you could have the whole King Arthur converting Merlin story, right? So kind of a redemption thing.
Yeah.
But just for this particular case, you've got Merlin, who's a mischievous character. He's aging backwards, and he's left the 20th century. right? And now he's in the 1600s. He's wanting comfort. And so he concocts this spell to start pulling stuff from the future because he hasn't figured out how to go to the future or reverse his aging process. So that's how they get there. And then he swipes their spaceship.
Oh, their craft. Yeah.
Their craft. And it doesn't fly anymore for whatever reason. And now he's trying to figure out how to make it fly so he can leave Earth. And he turns the three bozos over to the conquistadors. So that way he's thinking, okay, well, I don't have to take care of them. The Spaniards will do that for me.
I can see him getting the spacecraft airborne finally, and then they got to kick Merlin or the wizard, whoever, out, and then they get back to the present.
Okay, so boy.
Yes?
The title.
90 Miles Up. That's it.
So to recap, what we had that's real, New Mexico Spaceport is real. Bernard Gruber, the German accused sorcerer who died along the Hornada, he's real. Merlin's... I don't know if Merlin's really real outside of folklore, but yeah. So, but we threw Merlin in there, so.
I'm actually really enjoying this Midwest meets Merlin idea. Might have to write a whole universe around it. What would you do with Merlin and Billy the Kid?
Oh, boy. You've already covered that?
No.
No, you haven't yet.
Not specifically with Billy.
Oh, with Billy. My goodness.
So now it wouldn't be a one-man show.
Yeah, that's right. No, I mean, I played all the parts. That was the thing. I'm not sure where Merlin would come in there.
I think you just got to retell the Lincoln County War conglomerated with the legend of King Arthur and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like you make Billy the King Arthur figure or something. And I don't know who Merlin's equivalent would be in the Lincoln County War.
Maybe Pat Garrett.
Yeah. Or maybe John Tunstall. Yeah. He just wouldn't die.
It depends on if he's good or bad. Yeah.
Mordred would be the, the Santa Fe ring. Right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll save that one for another episode. For now, though, we have 1600s, a German sorcerer, somewhere in the 2000s, a spaceport, a weird time portal, and a potentially mischievous Merlin who's hijacking an advanced craft.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly went a direction I did not expect when you brought Spaceport to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Boyd, thank you for being in studio today.
Absolutely. Enjoyed it. Yeah. You guys obviously have fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is a blast. John's not saying anything. Now I'm worried.
No, I'm thinking about the next episode.
All right. Well, folks, you've been listening to Plot Pit. If you're interested in submitting your work for the show, send us an email at submissions@plotpit.com. Follow us on Twitter, as well as listening to these podcasts and sharing them, if you would, with your friends and family or other creative spirits through either of your social media outlets. You can also request access to our Discord server. We are beginning to build a community of like-minded story lovers. Additionally, we have content coming out on YouTube soon. I know I keep teasing that. That will be coming out. And then we will be starting a Twitch stream very shortly.
Yeah, and before too long, I think Boyd will be done with the narration on my books. And so if you're one of those who you just can't stand to read, but you listen, Boyd's very pleasant voice, you know, you can listen to that for Once Upon a Time in Fort Sumner or the noted desperado Pancho Dumez, and he actually does a pretty good teenager, believe it or not.
Yeah, that it should all be done, I would say, within the next month.
Okay,
and awesome. Ready for people to listen to.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Boyd, give us your socials.
Well, I'm on, of course, Facebook and Twitter, just, you know, under Boyd Barrett. Those would be my two main ones. I don't delve too much in the others. I'm there, but if you want to see me, those are the two places.
I'll leave links in the podcast description for our listeners. All right. Again, thank you for coming in studio today, Boyd.
Thank you.
Well, folks, until next time, we'll catch you around.